I remember that here we are then going to start. I don't know, I will just ask the committee assistant to just check for us who's outside so that we're then going to start. It's just a minute for us to be set. In welcoming you, what we'll do, we'll do the normal that we always do in the committee. You are head entity in front of us today. You can imagine how we feel. But we have to ensure that we drink lots of water to hydrate ourselves and also to address the level of concentration. I don't understand what is happening. Can you are you done with what you are doing? I don't understand what the Honourable Member is doing while the chair is there. So, we hope that our level of concentration will still be sharp. Are you done, Honourable Members? So that we can... Okay. Did you have your copies? Okay, thank you. We'll introduce ourselves as we usually do, and then you will introduce yourself. How you do that will depend on you, and then after that we'll then start with the presentation. And we'll be able to enjoy the chair of the portfolio committee on health. Next to me is Ms. Machalamba, who is the committee secretary at the extreme right behind. One that is Ms. Ngomane, who is our content advisor. In the absence of others, I will allow honorable members to introduce themselves. Thank you.
Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Dr. Maisela. I'm a member of this portfolio committee.
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Fishi Masolelo. Good afternoon, I'm Itmele Musala, part of the committee.
Thanks, Chair Sanmani. My name is Nitan Tangudendara, member of the committee.
My name is Mariban Zumacha, I'm a member of this committee.
Thank you, Chair. I say Kachawa, I'm a member of this committee.
It's over to you, President. Okay, sorry.
Good afternoon, I'm Rota Dlamini, and I'm the Deputy Chair of the Medical Research Council. I'm standing in for the chair.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Glenda Gray. I'm the president of the LC.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Richard Gordon. I'm the executive director of the MRC.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Philip Dupsi, divisional manager of finance, and standing in for the CFO.
Good afternoon. I'm Kibushila Mukwena. I'm a board member at the MRC.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'm a board member. My name is Louis Kuchan. I'm the board member of the MRC.
Good afternoon, honorable members. My name is Trish Hancom, and I am a board member and chair of the audit committee.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Linda Kiti. I work for the MRC. Thank you.
Good afternoon, honorable members. I'm the late Gang Mete. I'm a project manager at the MRC.
Good afternoon,
Republic of Senat Buga and the head of legal compliance at MRC.
Good afternoon, Chair. Good afternoon, honourable members. The panel is Lucille Gangadin, head of corporate and marketing communications.
Good afternoon. My name is Mutlosim Shwana from the Department of Health. Thank you.
Good afternoon. I'm Anmin Pele from the National Department of Health.
Good afternoon. My name is Kala Gastafan, Minister of Health.
Good afternoon, honourable members. My name is Cindy Leswazaga from the National Department of Health.
There are two ladies. The other one is on the extreme right. The other one is on the extreme left.
Good afternoon, members. My name is Valentine Smith. I'm a monitor with the Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
Good afternoon, everyone. Saul Chappi, Ethical Political Lobby.
Thank you very much. Over to you, President or Deputy Chief, whoever is going to make the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. We are presenting the South African Medical Research Council annual report for the 2014-2015 informative report. The scope of the presentation will be the introduction by myself, the performance against the council strategic objectives by the President, Professor Gray. The research highlights also are going to be presented by Professor Gray and Dr. Richard Gordon, which is the Executive Director of SHIP. The President will go on and present the HR, and the financial report will be presented by Mr. Philip Duplessis, who is standing in for the CFO today. Our strategic goals are the first one, to administer health research effectively and efficiently, to lead the generation of new knowledge, to support innovation and technology development to improve health, and to build capacity for the long-term sustainability of the country's health research. The South African Medical Research Council funds and conducts medical research with a focus on the top 10 causes of death in South Africa. It provides top-tier funding opportunities to develop new knowledge in medical research, which is innovative and technology-driven. It is spearheading the National Health Scholars Program and the training of medical and allied health professionals with respect to medical research. And it is addressing transformation of external funding by introducing a number of new initiatives and re-evaluating its grant funding mechanism. In this financial year, we have the third consecutive clean audit. We have two vice presidents that have been appointed, and therefore our executive team is now very stable. We have new extramural research units based at universities and three cancer centers based at three universities, which is UKZN, VEC and UCT. The president and CEO of the FMRC and her team has through her collaboration with AIDS Foundation, the UK MRC Newton Fund, and PARD, has secured 100 million funding into the organization for the next 3 years. And during the reporting period, the FMRC board approved the redesigning of the FMRC corporate identity to improve the organization communication and marketing abilities. Under transformation, we have 30 million rand has been awarded to 5 historically under-resourced universities in South Africa to fund research projects that will contribute to the prevention, reduction, and control of diseases in the country. We are actively supporting Walter Sisulu University and Sifako Mahadu University of Health Sciences to augment research capacity. We have self-initiated research grants that are realigned to increase the early stage investigator grantees. in improving clinical research, the council collaborates with the Department of Health and the private sector to facilitate national health scholars with the aim of producing 1,000 PhD graduates over the next 10 years. We had 41 employees were promoted to higher job levels across all categories, levels, race and gender, and this includes the employment of the first African female director. The research highlights and major deliverables. 481 peer-reviewed articles with the country affiliated author were published in the ISI journal, and additional 20 articles were published in peer-reviewed articles with the NMR affiliated author in the top four journals, the New England Journal of Medicine, the Lancet, Science and Nature. 86 bursaries, scholarships and fellowships were provided to postgraduate participants at different universities. 101 research grants awarded by CMRC during the reporting period. And in promoting innovation and technology, 31 invention projects were funded during the reporting period. The financial highlights, we have the banking audit, and the medium-term expenditure framework has confirmed an increase from 39.8% in funding allocation for the year 2014-2015, SMRC remains financially strong with accumulated reserve of 24 million. And during the reporting period, an increase of 7.1% million was evident. And I'm going to give over to the president.
Thanks very much. I'll just sit here and move the slides. So as you've heard, our strategic goals of the MRC, I'm not going to repeat the strategic goals, they're evident, and we're going to now report on the strategic goals. If you go to the next slide, this slide shows the objective and our indicators. And the objectives are well articulated. It's to ensure good governance, effective administration and compliance with government regulations, and to promote the organisations that administer the efficiency to maximise the funds available for research. And what are the indicators for this objective? It's compliance, first of all, with the legislative prescripts, and these are reflected in our audit findings, which relate to these processes and systems of the Medical Research Council. We also aim to be very efficient, and we only want to spend 1.2% of our total government allocated to be spent on administration. 20%. Sorry. In terms of our objectives of leading the generation of new knowledge, we want to produce and disseminate new scientific findings and knowledge on health, and this is evident by the number of peer-reviewed articles that we publish, and the number of peer-reviewed articles that acknowledge the Medical Research Council because we funded either the research or the support of the research. We also want to promote not only just to produce and disseminate scientific findings, we also want to promote scientific excellence and the reputation of South Africa and our health research. And this is evident by publishing in very high-impact journals, and namely the New England Journal of Medicine, the Lancet, the Science and the Nature. If we publish in these on journals, we have great prestige for South African scientists. We also want to provide leadership in the generation of new knowledge, and this is indicated by the number of people that are fifth author published by the MRC. We also want to facilitate the translation of medical research into health policy and practice. It's no use just doing research without actually having impact at the bedside. And this is evidenced by the number of new or local or international policies and guidelines that reference our research or that we're involved in making this policy. We want to provide funding for the conduct of health research, and this is evidenced by the amount of research grants that we give out to scientists in South Africa. In terms of supporting our innovation technology, Dr. Gordon will speak a lot about that, and our main aim there is to really provide funding for health research innovation and technology development, and we will tell you about this new objective of ours. And we measure this objective by looking at the number of innovation and technology projects that we fund to develop new diagnostics, devices, vaccines, and therapeutics. Very important for us in South Africa is to make sure that we have a long-term sustainability of health research in South Africa, and that we are growing the next generation scientists. As we all get older and older, we have to replace ourselves. And this is evidenced by, we count this intake by looking at the number of bursaries, scholarships and fellowships that we provide for post-grad study of master's, doctoral and postdoctoral levels. So if you go to slide 12, I hope you all have the slides next to you because the font is very bad and hopefully you've got them right next to you so you can see. So in terms of administration, we have, as we've heard, a clean audit, and we are very efficient in that we, although our planned target was to spend 30% of the government allocation on administration, we're down to 21%. And so we are an efficient and lean organization, and we want all our money to go to research. In terms of our core research program, you can see these are the numbers that I've spoken about. We published 481 journal articles last year. 85 out of the 100 had an, so 85 actuals out of a pen target of 100 had affiliations. The reason why there was some deviation in this is that the researchers weren't aware that they had to acknowledge the Medical Research Council in their publications, and we've corrected this by having an education outreach and also by putting it in our grant administration and our funding of budgets, that they have to sign, that they have to acknowledge the MRC and any of the research that they publish that has been funded by Medical Research Council funding, and this is increasing, and we've already improved our output on this. In terms of our high impact research, we were conservative. We in fact published 20 articles, just under two a month in the high impact journals, and the original one of 10 was conservative, as this was our first time we were bringing in these indicators, and so we're going to be readjusting that. In terms of our number of ISI journals where the first author is affiliated to MRC, we were conservative. We said 116, in fact 229 people. We have first author publications that have affiliations to the Medical Research Council, and the first 150 was a conservative indicator because we had not done it before, and so we underestimated the amount of science that the MRC was doing. In terms of the new policies and local guidelines, we've met our achievements of being involved, of our science being involved in local and international policies and guidelines. In terms of the number of grants that we awarded just 101, and our target was 100, and we slightly underestimated the number of research grants that we support. If you go to the next page, page 14, in terms of our innovation and technology, 31 projects funded by the MRC to develop diagnostic devices and vaccines have occurred during this reporting period, and there was slightly more technology and invention projects funded than anticipated, and we will go a little bit into that when Richard delivers his talk. In terms of capacity development, this is page slide 15, 86 students got bursary scholarships and fellowships. And these were provided by us, and this was also an underestimate, and going forward we will set a more realistic target in line with the available funding for bursary scholarships and fellowships. So in summary of our annual performance, we've achieved 9 out of the 10 targets, and 90%, the area we didn't achieve was around getting our scientists to acknowledge the funding by the Medical Research Council, and people will now acknowledge us because they are obligated according to the contract with us. So this indicator will improve, and we'll have a lot more people acknowledging the grant work, the funding from the MRC. In terms of our research programs, as you all know, we have an intramural and an extramural program. All the science that we do is aligned to the 10 most common causes of mortality in South Africa, and aligned to our national service delivery agreement. And for instance, in the intramural, in intramural and extramural units, in the area of health promotion and disease prevention, we have the following research units. We have alcohol, drug and other drug research units. We have the anxiety and stress disorder unit. We have the non-communicable disease research unit. We have the exercise science and sports medicine research unit. We have the environment and health research unit. We have rural public health and health transition research unit. And we have a violent injury and peace research unit. On the NSDA, on maternal and child and women's health, we have three research areas, research units. We have the gender and health research unit. We have the maternal and infant health care strategies research unit and development pathways research unit. For HIV, AIDS, TB and other communicable diseases, the NSDA3, which is combating HIV and AIDS and decreasing the burden of disease from TB. We have HIV prevention unit, the Center for TB research unit, molecular microbacterial research unit, respiratory and meningeal pathogens research unit, and the diarrheal pathogens research unit. For health system strengthening, NSDA4, strengthening health system effectiveness, we have the burden of disease research unit, the biostats research unit, the Cochrane Center, health systems research unit, and the health policy research unit. In terms of public health innovation, we have drug discovery and development research unit, the primate unit and adult animal center, our medical imaging research unit, and our diabetes discovery platform. For biomedical research, we have the Inter-University Cape Heart Research Unit, the Cytobiology Research Unit, Human Genetics Research Unit, Bioinformatics Capacity Development Research Unit, and the Immunology and Infectious Disease Research Unit. So you can see the depth and breadth of research that we do from cradle to grave, from discovery to the bedside to the community. And so we're very proud of the research that we do. In terms of the SDGs, we at the moment are focused on 2, 3, 5, 6 and 16 for our SDGs, which we will be bringing into play. In terms of our organizational highlights, we have articulated new values, pioneering, that describes the kind of research that we do, collaborative, we want to see our scientists collaborating with everyone, both inside the country and outside, and obviously excellence, because the research that we do is cutting edge and excellent, and we are making enormous strides in the kind of science that we do in the Medical Research Council. We have a new logo, and this logo represents, on the left you can see human beings, and it's a different from our previous logo. It also represents the South African flag, as you can see in the middle. And again, the DNA that is the origins of everything. And by putting all of these two things together, we demonstrate quite in a very nice way that we're advancing life, taking into account our past, the humanness, our country, and everything that binds us together, our DNA. What's very important, the Medical Research Council does spectacular work in trying to understand the burden of disease in South Africa. And we have tracked diligently how death is happening and the changes in death over time. And this is, I'm going to show you, we're doing this our second, this is data from our second National Burden of Disease study for South Africa, and I want to just show you from 97 to 2012. So between 97 and 2012, the causes of death have remained the same, but certain causes of death have improved, have got less, and others have gone up. And I'll start with HIV-AIDS. So HIV-AIDS still is the major cause of death in our country. It went right up, and we see it coming down now in 2012. So it went up, and now it's coming down, and we hope we see it continue to come down. In terms of interpersonal violence, it was the third commonest cause of death in South Africa in 97. It's now down, right down. The third lowest cause of death, so you can see how much we've improved in terms of interpersonal violence. What's coming up is diabetes. So diabetes used to be the 10th cause of death in our country, now coming up. And this is important to show you, because it helps helps the Department of Health start to plan for epidemics and to shift its focus. So it's very important and very nice to know that interpersonal violence has gone down, but it's also concerning to us to see that the non-communicable diseases in our country are starting to raise, and we have to take into account that. What's also very important is to look at our under 5 mortality rate, and this around 50,000 children die every year in our country. But what's very important to notice is the distribution, that 26, so 1 in 4 babies who die, 1 in 4 children under 5 who die in our country die in the first 28 days of life. And we need to really work on trying to reduce the number of of children dying in the first 28 days of life. And you'll see that they die from preterm birth complications, they die from severe infections, they die from birth asphyxia, and other things like pneumonia and groupie strep. And so we really have to work on trying to reduce that burden. Other things that children are dying of is HIV/AIDS, injuries, diarrheal diseases, and pneumonia. And these are important indicators, because as we roll out our new immunization programs, it will be important to understand how these impact. Also, it's important to know that 1 in 4 children die in the first 28 days of life, because it helps the health system and the Department of Health to plan and to make sure that we address the reasons why children are dying so early on in life. Very important to understand what's happening with cancer in South Africa. As you can see, in here, the males on your left and your females on your right, prostate cancer is going up in South Africa. And for men, lung cancer is going down, esophageal cancer is going down. Colorectal and stomach cancer remain at similar rates. For women, cervical cancer seems to be on the decline, and this could be due to HPV vaccination rollout, it could be due to the management of HIV, and it could also be due to improvement in screening and the management of CCA cervix. Breast cancer looks like it's going up, and we need to monitor this trend to see what's happening. And nice to see lung cancer is not increasing in women, and esophageal, colorectal, and stomach cancer remains very similar. So just important, the important thing, I think it's reassuring to see that lung cancer going down, which means that the tobacco control in our country is working, and of concern, and esophageal cancer is coming down, which means that some of the stuff that was leading it is being paying attention to. But of concern is obviously this increase in prostate cancer, and is this due to improved diagnosis, or is it due to the fact that men are living longer in South Africa, and we still don't know that just yet, we're starting to investigate that. In terms of our research highlights, I'm just going to, you have the books, and I'm going to just take a highlight some of the things I think will be important that the honourable members would like to know. We've strengthened our Eastern Cape Cancer Register. We have a rural cancer register, which we are tracking rural cancer in the Eastern Cape, and we have a nice publication on that. In terms of gender-based violence, so the MRC has made huge strides in gender-based violence. We have received a huge grant from DFID, and this has allowed us to create a footprint in Africa and even in Pakistan and Afghanistan to look at strategies to prevent gender-based violence. Some of these strategies are aimed at young girls, getting them into schools, and some of them are aimed at the home, and some of them are aimed at income generation, and some of them are aimed at addressing some of the issues with men, men-targeted programs. This is a very big footprint, and we're hoping to have good evidence on on interventions to reduce gender-based violence at a global level. Our TV unit, we do everything from genetics to TB trials, to understanding some of the issues around biomarkers and drug discovery, to issues around transmission. And Richard will do a little bit, will speak a little bit more about some of the TB diagnostics and stuff that we do. We are very interested in TB research. A lot of people are dying from TB despite the fact that it can be identified and treated, and trying to understand the interaction between host and pathogen. I'm taking into account infection, biomarkers, and drug development, and looking at bioinformatics as a way to help us propagate drug discovery or vaccines, or understanding why some people get TB and why some people don't. Because of the national, because of the NCDs increasing in our country, we have focused and will be focusing a lot on trying to understand our NCD burden and our determinants. And some of the things we're looking at is just the major, the pattern changing over time, the risk factors, some of the genetic and epigenetic features underpinning cardiovascular disease and diabetes in South Africa, and the burden and determinants of cardiovascular disease and diabetes in people with HIV. We're also looking at NCD risk evaluation. We're trying to develop evaluate risk models and developing new models for South Africa so that we can identify chronic kidney disease and diabetes earlier on. We're looking at risk reduction research, looking at strategies for that. We're looking at community-based approaches to cardiovascular disease risk reduction. We're looking at community-based diabetes prevention, and also looking at preventing cardiovascular disease and diabetes in the next generation. and implementing projects and cardiovascular disease prevention in children and adolescents, making sure that our future generation are safeguarded. We have a diabetes prevention project where we are looking at at a community level. We identify participants. We evaluate them for diabetes risk, and we introduce them into an intervention, and then we'll evaluate to see whether the intervention that we've developed at a community level is effective. And if it is, we hope to roll out interventions like this countrywide. In terms of our maternal and child health, the essential steps in managing obstetrical emergencies and our emergency obstetrics simulation program are very important. I showed you that one in four children, 26% of kids die in the 28 days of life. How do we impact on that? And some of our research is showing that if you just train midwives and doctors in the districts, you can actually reduce some of the deaths. This is a beautiful study that basically is just training districts, saturation training in 8 districts in South Africa, and has seen a 21% reduction in institutional maternal mortality rate, and directly a 20% reduction. So this just shows that all sometimes all we need is good training and support of doctors and nurses in our institutions to try and reduce the maternal mortality rate. This slide on 23 just shows the comparison of perinatal mortality rate before and after our intervention, and you can see that we impacted both on premature babies and babies that were full term, and we see around 10% reduction in mortality, which is spectacular. You know, the kind of movement, 10% is a big movement in reducing perinatal mortality rates. And not to, you know, it may look a little bit, but this kind of reduction is spectacular. And the bullet is due to some training intervention. And so you can imagine if we had to roll this kind of thing out in South Africa, how we would impact on maternal and infant mortality. In terms of our maternal and child immunization, South Africa ran the first placebo randomized control study, which demonstrated the protection of pregnant women and their infants against influenza-confirmed illness. So just giving women flu vaccines during pregnancy impacts on their outcome and babies. And we also have done great work in group B strep, and we've just conducted the first clinical trial investigating a trivalent group B strep vaccine to give to pregnant women. And if we do this, we believe that it can also reduce some of the mortality that happens in the first 28 days of life. Some people postulate that one of the biggest drivers of preterm delivery and early death is actually group B strep pneumonia. And if we can manage and control group B strep in women, you know, we can really reduce our preterm rate and our early neonatal death. And so this will be very nice to see, and we will be leaders in this area. Not only are we interested in maternal and child health, we're also interested in the issue of bioinformatics and biobanking and biomedical research. We've seen in the world over groups of people putting together biobanks and big data, and we are involved in B3 Africa, and this is trying to produce a harmonized ethical and legal framework to work between African and European scientists to make sure that we have a trustable informatics platform to allow bio-sharing and bio-resources. And this is very important. It's out-of-the-box thinking, and it's led by University of the Western Cape. We've just rolled out rotavirus vaccination in South Africa, and it's important to see once you roll out a new immunization, you sometimes get replacement diseases. So you roll out a rotavirus, and sometimes the types that you that are in your vaccine, you will see a reduction in those types, but then you have a replacement. And this study just shows that 37% of the if we sequence the whole genome of rotaviruses, 37% of the genomes that we're sequencing are untapped at the moment, and some of them are actually coming from avian sources. If you see our next slide. Next slide over there, and then to show you the impact. This is what's very important. Not only is it good to roll out vaccination programs, but it's very important to see what the impact is of rolling out a vaccination program. And this is a beautiful slide that shows just before rolling out how high incidence of rotavirus was, and then you just see, just going, moving on, how we reduce rotavirus and the outbreaks. And so this shows you the blue is diarrheal cases, and the red is rotavirus positive. And you can see that the rotavirus positive is getting less and less. And this is evidence, direct evidence in part of third marketing surveillance, that we are having an impact in the outbreak of rotavirus and diarrheal diseases. So this is a very beautiful slide and something to be very proud of. We are very also interested in the issues around early child health and how it predicts adult disease. And one of our most important cohorts is the birth to 20 cohort. These were called Mandela's children. This was a prospective birth cohort that was started in 1988 to 1989. About over 3,000 mothers and babies were recruited, mostly in Soweto. 68%, 50 years later, 68% of these families are still in contact with the study, and we have three generations. We have the mothers, we have the participants, the babies of the Victor 20, and we have their babies. So we have three generations that provide a very valuable feedback and understanding of diseases in South Africa. And just looking at the second wave, the babies of the babies, our second group of our babies are pregnant and have babies, and this just shows you some of the diseases and some of the issues that we should be worried about. In terms of the babies of the birth to 20, those who become pregnant, 67% of them are overweight or obese. They gained about 9 kilograms in gestational weight, which if you are underweight is not a problem. If you are overweight, this can be a problem. They have high rates of gestational diabetes, of preeclampsia, anemia, and HIV. We also are noticing a lot of maternal stress and depression, and obviously this impacts on fetal growth, gestational age, birth weight, and length in terms of programming and infant growth. So it's very important to try and understand some of the stresses and some of the conditions that women have and how they impact on the next generation. And if you see why this is important, this study shows, on page 42, shows the relationship between childhood obesity and later on obesity. And if you look at girls and boys, so if you're an infant or a toddler and you're overweight, you have an 8 times chance of becoming obese when you're older. If you are, if you have an overweight or an obese child who's 48 years old, there's a 42% chance of them becoming obese as adults. And this is in girls. For boys, those boys who are overweight between 4 and 8 years of age have a 20% increase in getting obese when you're old. So this is, let's make an intervention. And when you look at girls and boys, we're seeing at adolescence this divergence that there's stuff that's happening to girls. Girls just they diverge as they hit puberty, and the weight, the prevalence of overweight between boys and girls just gets astronomical. And this could be a combination of things. Obviously girls, as they get older, they become adolescents, they be less active. The role of hormones, estrogen, progesterone on your weight. And three, what's protecting boys? And boys are probably out playing soccer and being active, and so we need to try and understand how come boys aren't getting as overweight as girls. And so these are very important studies and very important work for us to do in terms of health promotion. I'm going to head over to Richard. He's going to talk about achievements, and you'll come back to me when we talk about HR stuff. But Richard's going to talk about SHIP and some of the achievements of SHIP. So Richard, I'll just navigate this for you. I'll start there.
Honourable Chair and honourable members, thank you very much for your time in listening to us. I'm going to be talking about the grant-making innovation unit at the MRC and some of the projects we are doing. We have about 50 projects, and in some time I'll probably just give a snapshot, a very high-level snapshot for the types of projects we are doing. It's been a very busy year. This unit's been going for about 3 years now at the MRC. It's a new unit that the previous President, Professor Karim, the persistent kind of brainchild. And the idea behind it was to develop innovations, local innovations, to address local health issues. And a couple of pictures of some of the things that have been achieved, major collaborations with the Gates Foundation in the middle and the top. Your Majesty, your Minister and the Minister of Science and Technology at the time with a major announcement about a neutralizing antibody. On the bottom left, we formed a joint venture with the entity in the US PATH, which was taking innovation through to scale to market. We launched in the middle and the bottom Grand Challenges at South Africa, which was an innovation and a funding mechanism to look at interventions for women in their last semester and the first 28-day device. So specifically looking for preeclampsia, hypertension, gestational diabetes, et cetera, et cetera. And the bottom right, that is Minister Pandor, with a program that signed with the UK government, DFID, for the Newton Fund, and that includes science, technology and health. And the Medical Research Council are carrying out the health-related projects in collaboration with the Newton Fund. So those are some pretty high-profile events that have all happened within the last 15 months within this entity. Thank you. Another entity that we have at MLC for funding is the flagships, flagship projects. And these are really, by definition, these were big ideas, big science, where it was a very close bid. Only each university who applied only allowed to submit three applications. So they had to choose for themselves which were the best projects that they could put forward to address health challenges of the country. And then it went through a peer review process. So the projects, these are just some examples of types of projects that we are funding, and we are really looking to look at new drug regimes for patients with multiple drug resistance TB, a randomized clinical trial. The effect of alcohol and the intervention improving adherence to antiretroviral theory, because alcohol and HIV are going hand in hand these days, and we're trying to understand the socioeconomic impact behind it. A multidisciplinary approach to understanding the causes and consequences of HIV transmission and drug resistance in high epidemic settings in rural South Africa. So what interventions, if you went into the areas where you have the highest level of HIV, what could you be doing to try to prevent transmission? And another study from intramural units, the impacts of race on women in HIV acquisition and retention linkages to care, and a longitudinal study with our gender and violence unit. Thank you, Benda. If I move more to the devices, the MRC president was talking specifically about how diabetes is on the rampage. And there's a prediction that in 20 years' time, we're going to have more diabetics in South Africa than we have HIV positive. And it's really about prevention being the friend. So this is a project within the MRC that we have been funding for a few years now. And it's really, we identified a couple of biomarkers, things in your urine or in your blood, which indicate whether you have diabetes or at risk of getting diabetes. And if today you went to a physician and they said to you, well, here is a urine sample, put a dipstick in, and you get a urine, I'll say you have glucose in your urine, you're diabetic. So the whole idea behind this is you have a urine-based dipstick 3 years before you become diabetic. Next slide, please. So one slide, this is about as technical as I want to get to this presentation, but if you look in the top right-hand table, these are samples taken from two patients and their blood readings. If you went to the doctor with your readings of 5 and 5.1 for glucose, etc., they would classify you as being normal. You're in the bounds of normal. However, based on the evidence we have seen for protein 1 and protein 2, these people actually are in early pre-onset diabetes from the same samples. So what we're investing in is developing a urine-based diagnostic. We don't know if it'll work, but we're going to try to know 3, 4 years, 5 years before you get diabetes if you are at risk of pre-diabetes or early onset diabetes. So what that is then if you know that, then you can start doing things like your diet and exercise, etc. The whole social aspect is different, but this is what we're trying to achieve. And if it works, this could be an international product that we have produced in this country, say global. But, you know, being realistic, we'd be 20 to 30% likely of success at this stage. We need to invest more in the project. Thank you. And the reason for this is we see the impact of diabetes from a cost to the Department of Health in terms of what does insulin cost. What we don't see is the massive disease burden and the cost in managing diabetic patients to the state, which is way in excess of getting it early in advance. So we're really trying to prevent before it gets too late. Next slide, please. We have 4 projects in TB diagnostics. And the point of these TB diagnostics, we all know about the gene experts that get rolled out in South Africa. and the gentleman sitting behind me, Anban, who sits in our steering committee, one of the key things is we want people to go home with their medication in a pocket. We do not want them to give a sputum, then 3 weeks later you then get your results, or a week later and you can't find them. So the four projects that we have, and Nongwe, who is with us today, will be, who is project manager, will be, if you have any questions on these, we're using four different technology platform bases to try and come up with interventions, and all of them are point of care, cheap, very quick, and with the goal of having a readout within 30 minutes. At this age, it's really a screening tool. Is it likely you have TB or not? It's not the level of you have drug-resistant TB, etc. But at least you have the chance of the patient going home with their drugs in their pocket and to get the first round of medication. Because if you don't, you have 3 weeks where they're potentially transmitting TB to other people in whatever environment that's going to be. So this is an example of the first project, which is essentially you're spitting into a small tube. It lies, and it's only batches of 35. It can go in the back of a 4x4 and go to wherever it needs to go in the country. Thank you, Dana. This is an example of two other prototype devices using different technology bases but the same output of trying to get a readout in a very spaced short of time to getting patients on treatment. Thank you again. So this is the third one for the urinary biomarkers. We're trying to see, could you have a urine-based diagnostic for where somebody has diabetes, you urinate into a vial, you put a lateral flow kit in there, and it prints out 1 line or 2 lines, like a pregnancy test, where you're likely to have TB or you're not likely to have TB. So the impact of innovations like this could be enormous if we get them right. And we're trying to play a niche in South Africa in that space to get local innovation to address local health needs. Next stage. I've got two projects to talk to you about on apps. Very, very simple. And this is the first one. We have a project where we have put into an app format the 3-hour scale. So if you go to Barrow-Barnith or Kailisha or wherever on Friday night, and you, what previously used to happen, you have a 3-hour scale, and you hope the person who took you through 3-hour scale knew all of the different objects, etc. What we've got it is we've got it in a tablet form, where it takes you down a list of questions. If you come in and you're a woman with stomach pains, and you have some diarrhea for a few hours, you don't just put them in the queue and say, okay, we think you've got some gastro, you can sit here because it's not urgent, and no one thinks to give a pregnancy test that it could be an ectopic pregnancy. So it takes you through the age, gender, is it tummy pain, is it this? If it is tummy pain, do a pregnancy test first thing if it's a woman between the age of 15 and 40. And it's about taking you logically through a triage to reduce mistakes and interventions. We've trialed this at a couple of hospitals and we have seen to reduce mistakes by up to 90% of incorrect triaging, and it also helps you prioritize patients. It's an early stage project, but we've shown that it works, and we're looking to see other ways we can take it forward in the national health system that's free to the public. The next question, slide, my last slide to show you, and this was a project that came from the Department of Health, and they said, if you're working remotely in South Africa, and it's probably happened to all of us, and you go to a doctor and say, well, you need to go into a medication, they take your weight, they take your height, and they say, what other drugs do you want? Then they go to the formulary book, and they say, okay, you go to page 30, and they look down, and this is the drug you want. Well, it was on the DOH's website as a PDF. And if you're working in a remote hospital, it's quite arduous to go through a 300-page PDF and find your document. So what we've done to the Department of Health is to digitize into an app. But you download it onto your phone, you click on it, and you click on the disease, you click on the indication, look at the drug, and you click on the drug, and it'll tell you the different weight regimes, etc. You've got a calculator, you put in the patient's weight, gender, and it pops up, this is the medication people need to be on. You could even click on a link with it to tell you where the nearest dispensing pharmacist is. So this hasn't been launched yet, so it's confidential. But it is an idea of exactly what we're trying to do, using innovation to address the country's health needs. And I will stop there. Thank you.
I'll continue. So I hope we've shown you that we are interested in all aspects of health, and it's not just medical science. It's actually to make healthcare work. It's training of staff at neonatal units and pregnancy units, and it's discovery and it's surveillance. And so we feel that we are giving good service in terms of health research, and that we are covering a whole aspect of health for South Africa. Now I'm going to go on and just talk a little bit about our human resources. We have developed this year a transformation strategy. We've established a transformation forum, and we have transformation targets. We also have an employee wellness program. We are a unionized organization.
We have low vacancy rates, we have low turnover rates, and we are also very serious about skill development and capacity development. In terms of the profile of the Medical Research Council, you can see that at the top level of the MRC, 54.5% of all senior officials and managers and people at the top level are white. 20% are African, and of the people at the top, 45% are non-white, and 20% of those are Africans, and the majority of people at the senior part of the organization, half of them are white, and we are addressing this in our transformation forum. And you can see that we have a nice pipeline in our second level of the MRC. There's the second tier layer. The shift is different, which means that we have to be addressing the pipeline issue. And in this second tier, only 21% of our people are white, and 25% are African. And so there's a quarter. And so you can see that that the pipeline is looking good, and we need to keep making sure that our pipeline reflects the demography of the country, and we are serious about making sure that the profile is transformed over the next 5 years. In terms of our transformation forum, you can see we have established a transformation forum, and we have diversity in the program. They've had the induction, we're working on the policy, and this is going to be a very active forum, and second to the EMC, one of the most important forums in our organization, who will ensure that the MRC is true to the transformation agenda. In terms of absenteeism, I thought I'd just take some snippets. How is the MRC doing? Are we doing good or are we doing bad? And the best way to measure that is in absenteeism. And so looking in 2012, 2013, our sick absenteeism rate was 2.17, and this represented a cost to the organization of 2.4 million rand. And in 2012, 2013, we spent 2.4 million rand on absenteeism. In 2014-15, our absentee rate is less than the national average, and we only spent just over 850,000 rand on absenteeism. So hopefully this is a reflection of morale, and that also that we're not costing the taxpayer of money by being absent. I continue to work on this. I'm very interested in trends. What happens over weekends and over at the end of the month, and trying to work at an individual level on trying to understand and reduce absenteeism, and I think our wellness program and issues around mental health come into this thing. But I am committed to keeping the absenteeism rate below the national average. Why do people? Well, I've mentioned they have a low turnover rate, only 16%, only 93 out of 587 people left the MRC in 2014, 2015. Why did they leave? They died on the job. They resigned. Their contract expired. There was a very few, I think in the report you can see some dismissals from misconduct. There were some retirements, some terminations and retrenchments based on our 186 process. So it was just the last bit of it. But the annual report gives a nice breakdown, and most people they're not leaving because they've been dismissed, which is a good thing. In terms of our financial report, I'm going to ask our financial guru to give an input, and then I have a last slide just about something that we as the parliamentary committee and we as the MRC to think about in terms of the future.
Thank you, Glenda. Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. Just the fact that we're here shows that we still operate as a government concern based on from a financial perspective. Now, the financial performance for 2014-15, we received a clean audit for a third year in a row, and based on the audit opinion, the MRC presented the financials fairly, and we complied with the financial performance and cash flow statement with the South African standards of CRAP, as well as the requirements for the PFA. Now, the statement of financial performance, also commonly known as the income statement, reflects as follows. Our revenue increased by 2.5% from 651 million to 667 million, and our operating expenditures accordingly increased by 4% from 670 million to 697 million for the year ending March 2015. After taking into account our investment income and fair value adjustments, we end 2014-15 with a deficit of 3.7 million as to the surplus that we ended in the previous financial year of 4.5 million. Now the revenue, as earlier stated, increased by 2.5%. Now that consists of our government grant, which increased by 7.1% from 365 to 391. And please keep in mind that this excludes VAT. So if you go to your the E&E document, that figure will reflect the amount inclusive of VAT. And our research contracts reduced slightly by 3.5% from 285 million to 276 million. And that's basically just because due to contracts that came to an end. Also, new contracts that came on board, but because there were some agreements not completed as at the end of a financial year, we could not recognize those funds as income in our financials. Now, on the expenditure side, our operating expenditure increased by 4% from 670 to 697, and that's mainly due to the increase in our collaborative research, which increased from 189 million to 261 million, and that's mainly due to the increase in SHIP grants that we gave out in that specific financial year, as well as the first payment that we made to National Institutes of Health for the three-year NIH-MRC collaborative agreement that was signed earlier. To offset this increase of collaborative research, our travel decreased by about 26% from 53 million to 31 million, and staff cost by 7% from 298 to 277 million. Thanks, Glenda. Now, in summary, for the year, we prepared a budget for deficit with a deficit of 44 million, and as indicated, we ended with a deficit of 3.7 million, and that's mainly due to contracts not being signed as at the end of the financial year, as well as milestones that was not met on contracts that has already been signed and following payments is to go out. So basically what happened is that we followed new internal processes and those contracts payments will only go out in the new financial year. From the financial position or the balance sheet, our reserves as at the end of March 2015 was 241 million. It's a decrease of about 3 million, which is in line with the deficit that we reflect in our income statement. Our assets decreased by 7.3% from 509 million to 471 million, and cash and cash equivalent reduced by 6.4% from 335 million to 313 million due to payments made to creditors as well as capital expenditure that we incurred in the financial year. Now, in conclusion, an increased funding allocation for 2015-16 is on the cards at 39.8%, that's about 623 million, that's inclusive of VAT. That's our budget of government allocation for 2015-16. And together with the accumulated surplus as affected in our financials of 242 million, MRC is well assured that we can still operate as a going concern for the years to come. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think you can see that we offer good value for money and we have good impact. But it's also my job to tell you, it's my job to tell you about the looming epidemics and things to worry about, and also my job to tell you about other things. And one of the things that worries me and that keeps me up at night is some of the critical shortages that we do have, and one of the things that I am worried about is our lack of critical mass of biostatisticians. So at a national level, at a university level, at an MRC level, we don't have enough biomedical statistics. It's a scarcity. People who get trained, they get stolen to all parts of the world, to banks, to pharmaceuticals, to COOs, And so we have a critical shortage. We have an ongoing critical shortage. We train one and they're stolen by UCT or by Pharma. And so basically we just can't seem to be able to train enough statisticians to take care of the work that we do. And these are critical for the success of our research. Everything we do, we have to make sure that we have data integrity and we have integrity on the data that we show you and that we can be sure. And not having statisticians is a problem for us. And we do need to work with the Department of Higher Education to look at short-term, mid-term, and long-term strategies to develop a cadre of people that are skilled in maths and that can become biostatisticians, bioinformatics experts in that. And the other thing that's worrying me is that I see it every day, because CVs come to my email from all over the place, is that we are growing the next generation scientists. The Minister of Health wants us to produce 1,000 PhDs over the next 10 years. But what we have to do as well, we have to create a support for them. You know, there's lack of support. So once you've got your PhD, there's a lack of support for postdoc support. There's a lack of support of career development for recently qualified PhDs. So I'm just saying that what I'm seeing as we grow the next generation of scientists is that we also have to create an environment for these scientists to flourish in South Africa, otherwise we will lose them to other parts of the world, or they'll go back into clinical medicine, which may be not a bad thing, or we may lose them to Big Pharma or to the USA. And so we have to look at ways of retaining those critical skills that we are growing in this country. And so that's just my last thing that I just wanted to tell the honourable members and our honourable chair, just things that keep me up at night besides the budget.
Thank you. There's the presentation, honourable members. You can see honourable Ndaba, honourable Musala, honourable Solnik, and honourable myself in that order.
Thank you. First, the chair, I want to welcome the report and give comments to MRC for the good work that they're doing, and with regard to the achievements that they have and the projects that they are working on. Chair, I think it's for the first time that I hear all these good initiatives that they are doing. So as the Portfolio Committee Chair, I'm sure we're here. But lastly, Chair, I want to check, you pardon me if maybe they did talk about what I'm going to add now. It's about scarcity of BCG. If they have any thoughts of if there's anything that they can replace it with. Thanks, Chair.
No, thanks, Chair. Let me also take this opportunity to congratulate the MRC. I see it's 5 years running that they've been having a good report, you know, from the Auditor General. I thought that you would, just on a lighter note, you know, share with us the research that you did to reduce absenteeism due to sickness, you know, in your institution. But on a serious note, even if you got a clean audit, you know, the Auditor General has raised a concern around your management of your procurement and your contracts. And if maybe you can just take us through. But also there's an issue around your irregular expenditure of our 729,000, fruitless expenditure of about 69,000. If you can really comment on that and explain to us how you're going to turn the situation around so that you must have a sort of data, you've got a ping report. The other issue is we operate in ATEC and we're part of the African continent. So nothing came out from your presentation with regard to the role you are playing in ATEC countries in terms of sharing expertise, transferring knowledge, and acquiring also new knowledge and so on and so forth. And the projects that you are actually running, you know, in SADC and in the African continent with similar, you know, institutions, if they are there and so on and so forth. If they are not there, the capacity that you are building, if you can really
comment on that one. We are part of the BRICS. Community now in South Africa. That's right. Nothing came out. Nothing. We did raise this issue previously. You know, to say, do you have any relationship with similar institutions in the BRICS community? You know, especially those that are advanced like Russia and China. You know, India, of course, and so on and so forth. What is the situation there? The start and over. It's at about 2 and 13% amongst your skill staff. Do you have a turnaround strategy in place to retain staff, but also to attract scarce skills? And the issue that you raised in the last issue of you training this particular skills and they get stolen by America universities and so on and so forth. Would it not be in your interest to ensure that those that you train, those that are your products, those that you invest in, you make them to sign a 20-year contract? You say they will not leave MRC up until after 20 years. Because 20 years, I think, is sufficient time to develop others. So that those ones, if they are stolen, you already know that you have produced others. That's my last comment, Shay, that from my understanding, I can see that you are, the MRC is having some financial, it's at some level with regards to your finances, and I'm confident you will meet all your financial obligations. But I would appreciate if you can respond to some of the issues that I raised. Thank you very much.
I wish you could train more people and let them be stolen more and more. And that way we'll know that we're getting someone. We used to train the best doctors in the world, and they are world-renowned researchers and medics all over the world. And I think there is nothing wrong with training more and more and let them be stolen. I'll back you up on that one. That's fun. But it looks like your research is actually mostly clinically related type of research. And maybe if we could look into some other things, I'll come to that anon. And of the 31 invention projects, how many were successful? And have you ever thought of creating that situation where we were able to make success on vaccines, you know, do research in vaccine making? And Africa is a whole lake of potential vaccine type of research and done on that. And I think most doctors in the world were tropical medicine were trained in South Africa, but I don't think now we are. But that maybe is another story. But maybe the researchers can be trained who will be well known very soon. And you talk about doing research in obesity among children, but it is just for statistic purposes, or is it geared toward prevention? And because it is for statistic reasons, well, fine. But the idea is to prevent. Because nutrition, if we don't have it correctly and balanced and all sorts of things, we are just maybe going to create a pool of sick people. It's like creating electric for coffins and say, well, these people are going to die. We better be prepared and have coffins. Instead of saying, we are going to stop them from dying by preventing them from dying. So I think maybe if we could look into the nexus of nutrition and wellness. Maybe we could save a lot of money down the line, and would have done some very use value type of research that could save lives and make the people, the majority of the people, live better and longer. think that's something which must be looked into carefully, research into nutrition and how to fight the people who, I mean, the entities that give our children junk food and laying the foundation for them to get into coffins before they are ready to do that. I think that is something that maybe we should sit down and see what can be done in that particular health nexus going into the future. Because I think it's key. It's no use having a nice anti-venom vaccine and then nobody's bitten by snakes and you keep on producing that sort of thing. Even if two people killed by snakes, so what? Unlike 1,000 people here who are just going to be, who are being pushed into, and like damage into the ocean through diet. And I think somebody sometime was saying that within the past 20 years, there were about maybe 2,000 multinationals who come here just to sell junk food, and we allowed them to do that. And those are the factories I'm talking about, you know, building coffins and for our people. So maybe if we look into it from that angle. Yeah, I think let me stop there because we need to have a session for this particular one sometime. Yeah.
No, thank you, Honourable Member. Just to also Honourable Veronica.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. I must say I always enjoy coming to the MRC presentations once a year. It's like some of these innovations are like being an episode of the Big Bang Theory. It's just incredible stuff. Brings up the science speaking again, especially, I mean, looking at your early diagnostic testing for EB and for diabetes, for example. It's incredible what you really are doing our country proud. But no organization is perfect, and so I do have a few questions that hopefully will assist in improving MRC. The first is, one of the critical areas is the need to translate, as you all know, research into policy and practice. And I do see that you have, as a focus, a translational research role. You set yourself a target of only four, so only four guidelines or four policy documents, not just nationally but globally. That's a huge net, and four seems to be a very low number. Why is that number so low, and are you looking to increase that? The next question I have actually links to what the Honourable Ndala asked about TB. I mean, you know, apart from HIV, TB vaccinology, I would imagine, is really one of the key areas. I know there was a fed of an MVA, 85A, I mean, the additional vaccine efficacy, but, you know, which is a bit of a setback, but we still need a booster or a replacement vaccine. Are there any active projects in that at the moment? The next question I have is around the strategic, the innovations partnership unit. You know, some of this stuff has potential for commercialization, I would imagine. So who owns the property rights for the MRC, and will that then result in revenue flowing back into your organization, which would be a good thing, I would imagine. Then with regards to the one question I had on finances, you spoke about the National Institutes for Health partnership, the 44 million year. Now that has come with certain opportunity costs. You've had to decrease your travel budget for travel by 25%, which I would imagine limited international exposure. You've had to increase staffing costs by 7%, which is actually 21 million rand, a lot of money. And so the question really I have is what exactly is the benefit for us to this partnership that we've invested so much in? It's value for money. And the last question I have is just with regards to the issue that Professor Ray spoke about in terms of grooming the study, grooming the next generation of scientists. I think this is the key right here. But I would argue that the Department of Higher Education is too late. We have to work way upstream. I mean, the idea is to identify the child in the rural area who is very disadvantaged, but yet has the potential to become the next Nobel laureate. And getting the opportunities to that young high school student so that they can achieve that potential. And so would you not also work with basic education, having young scientists, studentship opportunities, bringing them in, exposing them to the world of MRC? Wouldn't you want to start in our stream as opposed to at university level? Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Gray. I just want, while it's a comment, something that is close to my heart, and I'm a bit disappointed. I would have thought that you would uplift that. I was tempted to what made me to want to ask that question is the issue of absentism. in the public service personal committee. It's either towards the end of August or early September. In fact, there was an article in Citizen about the impact of interfering in the public service. And when I saw that article, I went to the Chairperson of Public Service and Administration. Said, in fact, the only thing is that why it can't be quantified is it's because of the stigma related to. Now, I would have thought that as the Medical Research Council, it's not all about the public service, just right across the impact of mental health in our country. And as the country, how are we doing? And I think that's the major weakness in appreciating the report, that's a major weakness. And I'd appreciate if, not now, if you're unable to respond on that, if you can get an answer during the course of the week. My second question is 181 in the main document. It's notes on the financial statements. In the thing like expenditure incurred with relative party suppliers. I'm of the understanding that maybe those institutions, those universities, are universities that you fund. But I'm finding something very strange, and I would request why. University of Pretoria in 2014, it was 12 million, close to 18, it went up to 18. You take University of Limpopo, it was 6.4, I will assume that that's million, and it went down to 84. But when I'm looking into the ALTEM advantaged institutions, theirs go up. You'll take Walter Sisulu, there's nothing in 2014, but in 2000 and in this current year, it's 1.3. I just want to check. You go to University of KZN, it's 10. It went down to 4. That's what made me when I was to attracted me that if I can be explained why they're up, and in the universities which are previously disadvantaged, which much money will be needed to do the research, there is a job. I if I can get that clarity, because it really concerns me. Because I'm of the understanding that those are the institutions that as universities that are supposed to be boosted up. And in fact, it's not a secret. The universities that are getting money are universities that had money from days in memory. So if it's just that disparity, it can be explained, I would appreciate that. Otherwise, I have been covered by some of the questions that have been asked by honorable members. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. Maybe I'll start also with the issue of mental health. And you're right, underpinning all the deaths in South Africa is the issue of mental health. And the Minister of Health just recently launched the Ministerial Advisory Committee on Mental Health, and I went to the committee to hear what were the things the Medical Research Council could support. And I learned there that we actually don't have a baseline survey on mental health in this country, so we have no idea what the burden of mental health is. We haven't got tools that have been validated, and we haven't assessed it. So I said that the MRC would assist
the Ministry Advisory Committee to help with the baseline assessment. We need a mental health, a national mental health survey, so that we can understand, what is the prevalence, where it's happening, and to design our interventions, because we don't know where it's happening, and we don't know what the spectrum is. It's very hard for us to understand, and also to try and unpack the relationship between mental health and drug and alcohol use, and depression and death, and some of the stuff. So we need to know our epidemic, and we don't know it properly yet. We have feeling about it, but we've never articulated in a scientific way to understand it. So in order to try and execute a program, we need to understand the epidemic so that we can put our little limited resources to be most effective. So I hear you, and it's a very important thing, and we'll be working. We're doing a national demographic survey, and I've spoken to the person running it to see whether we can put in some of these questions to start to address the issue of mental health in a more strategic way than we've ever done before. In terms of the MRC, I was happy to see the absentee rate go down. I think it's a combination of a wellness program, vaccination, flu vaccine, getting a flu vaccine in winter, and making sure that we're keeping our workforce healthy so that they come to work. Also, we need to address some of the mental health issues in a much more strategic way. I'm going to just go down, and I'm going to hand over to what I missed. I have a solution and hand over to Philip. But in terms of the expenditure, I'll leave to my financial people. I'll just go straight to the question of SADC, because you'll do BCG. So I just gave highlights, and we would be at our kingdom come if I had to show you all that we are doing. But we do take our role in Africa and in the SADC area very, very, very seriously. And we are working with, in the Southern African region, we're working on HIV vaccine development. And we'll be rolling out a vaccine program. The MRC is a co-funder of something called the P5, which is a public-private partnership. And we have a footprint in Malawi, Zambia, Mozambique, Zimbabwe, and South Africa. And we'll be doing vaccine development, HIV vaccine development within that SADC area. We're also working malaria. So South Africa is the only country in the South Africa that has GIS mapping for malaria. And so we map malaria to alert our SADC countries where there are outbreaks. So we do this at the MRC. We also work with, we have collaborating centers on malaria, and they also work with their partners. In terms of other SADC partnerships, we're working together with the CSIR to develop a nanotechnology platform to use for malaria, so that we can help our SADC partners with that. So there is collaboration with SADC, and next time I'll explain it better, and I'll choose that as one of them. In terms of Africa, we work with Sudan and Madagascar, and we're developing some relationships we've had bilateral meetings with our similar counterparts in Sudan and Madagascar, and we'll be developing further relationships with them. We also have relationships with Kenya, and supporting the recently launched Academy of Science program on Grand Challenges Africa. So we're working with that. In terms of BRICS, we have numerous relationships with BRICS. We work with India we have both a subtype C epidemic, and so we work on characterization of HIV for both India and South Africa. We had a recent visit by the Minister of Health from China. We're working within China on two programs. One is, and this is my BRICS, we have, besides Russia, so any group that I haven't been able to, that we need to work on is Russia. But we in terms of our relationship with Brazil, India, and China, we're setting up a multi-program, multi-country initiative on child obesity to address some of your issues. So not just looking at South Africa, but what are the interventions that could work in China, India, South Africa, and Brazil in childhood obesity. So we're working in that area. So we have failed
with Russia, and it's something that we can look at in the future. In terms of China, we're working with them on an HIV vaccine that also has a subtype C, and working with CDC China. So we have got some relationships with BRICS besides Russia. We're also working with the Department of Health with the African Research Initiative, where we're bringing in a whole group of Department of Health from Africa and a scientist to have an African strategy to look at the research strategy for Africa. We have our planning meeting in December, and we're going to have an inaugural meeting next year to have a framework of research in Africa together with our colleagues in the rest of Africa. So we are working. Maybe we could work more, and next time I will highlight that as well. In terms of the bottleneck, I agree with you that, you know, it is good to say that the people we train are eaten up all over the world, and which means that I've got to create a map so that the attrition doesn't affect us at the end, and that our bottleneck isn't too small, that we only, you know, every 10 we put in, we only retain one. You know, we need to put in 100 and retain 20 at the end, and I agree that we do need to contribute to capacity development. In terms of other skills, it's a turnover rate in staff is a good and a bad thing. When you're looking for transformation, you know, you do need to turn staff over. So I do need to get people in and out of the MRC so that we can change the profile of the organisation. If everyone stays, you know, we're gonna grow up together. And so we do need to make sure that we keep the skills moving through the MRC. We are interested in learning statistics of obesity. There's an epigenetic component to child obesity, which we have to understand in South Africa. So I'm not just interested in counting the number of obese children in the country. I'm interested in understanding what are the epigenetic components that cause our children to be obese, and what are the interventions. And the interventions are during pregnancy. And so this collaboration we have with Russia, with China, India, and Brazil, will be looking at pregnancy intervention and see how we can impact on childhood obesity. And so that's very important. We're also looking at things like sugar tax. So some of the, you know, what is the role of sugar tax on reducing obesity in our country? And we always used to hail wherever was a village in Africa, was a Coca-Cola, a cold Coke, a cold bottle of Coke. And that's been at our peril. That such a successful thing like Coca-Cola has managed to get a cold Coke in every village, and also now making our people fat. And so there's an issue that we have to address. So that not all development is good, and we do need to address some of those policy issues around it. Translating clinical evidence into practice is a huge dilemma that the world over faces. And we have a flagship project called SAGE that actually looks at why we can't translate evidence into practice. And so we're looking at it from a very theoretical framework so we can understand why, how we can optimize our use of guidelines. And so we look at the development besides just making sure that our data in guidelines, but also to try and understand what are the issues of guideline development and why do we fail at implementing guidelines in South Africa. How are they developed, why can't we train on them, and that. So the whole development issue that we have to address. Richard will talk about CV vaccinology and institutional intellectual property. The NIH, right, you know, what is the benefit? And so, you know, as the rand devalues, the cost of this grant is increasing. It's a 3-year grant, so we're in our middle year, and next year is our last year. What have we benefited? So even though we've lost revenue, we've also gained it. Remember, the money comes back, and it comes back twice. It only comes back plus the American money comes into us. So we've gained on the exchange rates coming in, and we felt a little bit of the pitch going out, but we have benefited. In terms of impact, we only know once the projects are gone. You know, we only know the impact of your research 3 or 4 years down line. But the science that we funded is spectacular, and hopefully it will create a whole generation of new scientists and new collaborations with universities. So yes, we feel the pinch, and we do cry, but we do gain. We don't gain directly, but the universities gain because they get the money in the dollar amount, and so they everyone's laughing all the way to the bank. So it is an issue, but I think it's a 3-year project. Will we do it again? Probably not, because of the rand exchange rate. I think there are better ways of spending our money
to get the same kind of impact. So a good experiment, valuable experiment, and it'll be high impact science that we'll get out of it. In terms of the statistic, I agree. You know, we've got to start right in basic education and start to talk to how we grow the generation scientists and how we grow the statisticians. So I will work on that. In terms of the finance, I think Philip, you already saying, so maybe I'm simple and could get all wrong, but I think the 2015 is only 3 months, January, February, March, and that's what looks so little. 2014 is a bit longer. It's 9 months, but I could be wrong in terms of the amount of stuff going to the institution. But 2015 is 3 months. Yeah, you know, it's one of the reasons could be we're looking at 9 months versus 3 months. But that could be too simple. But anyway, well, I'll let the finance people answer that. So can I hand over to you?
Honourable members, Honourable Chair, thank you very much. I'll try and pick up some of the questions that the President has done. Let's start with that one last. There are a couple of reasons why some of the universities ebb and flow. The most obvious one is grants ending and new ones starting. In 2015, there was a massive bolus in new grant funding that came in. The SHIP grants, the flagship awards, etc. And these were sort of 10, 15 million rand awards. So they're only given out to a small segment of the universities.
And SMU were one of them.
Yes, so SMU, that's why they've been ramping up. One of the things we are learning and we are addressing, it's one of our top priorities. The MRC is typically funded through an open innovation RFA call. And that is probably not the way we want to carry on going for all of our grant-making mechanisms, because we're finding, statistically, we are biasing it towards the previously advantaged institutions. A, in terms of number of applications, and B, in terms of the level of experience in the grant writing. So things that we're trying to do actively is things like grant writing workshops, limiting number of applications from some of the larger universities, and to try and level play fields, and to the extent of having completely different grant mechanisms for different grants, where the eligibility criteria are only for previously disadvantaged universities, or twin proposals with slightly larger universities. So something we've recognized by combining the different grant making entities in the MRC in the last 6 months, whether you take self-initiated research grants, SHIP grants, flagship grants, the statistics are the same. And we need to proactively address that. And it's something that it's a very high priority, are looking to address. So maybe not next year, but the year after, because these are 3-year grants, you'll see the change in the funding mechanism. So that's the last question first, if you don't mind. In terms of vaccines and BCG, well, it wasn't on the SHIP slide, about 70% of the funding that we are spending within the SHIP unit are on vaccines, HIV and TB vaccines. You will probably not believe it, but most of that is TB vaccines, because there's a lot more going on in the HIV vaccine space that's more advanced than in the TB space. TB vaccinology is pretty much in the dark ages in comparison to HIV vaccines and the vaccine research. And if you look globally, what's happened is the big global funders of TB vaccine work have effectively stopped funding TB clinical trials, TB vaccine clinical trials, because they don't believe they're working. So most of the SHIP funding that we are funding is in identification of biosignatures, sort of immune responses, biosignatures of what makes a vaccine work and what doesn't make a vaccine work. We still don't know how BCG, if I take your blood and my blood, I don't remember whether the BCG worked for you or worked for me. We don't have that correlation yet. So that's the kind of thing we are trying to invest in, to understand how is BCG and the vaccines working in the human system in phase one before getting these massive big clinical studies. So we're playing in a very small defined area and have committed more than 200 million rand over the next 3 years in this space particularly, because we want to lead in the world. All the scarcity of BCG is another issue we need to be looking at. My president just reminded me of that. I'm not a health systems person, but BCG is not ubiquitously in supply across the world. So BCG, it's an old vaccine. We're looking at new vaccines. People are realizing that most of the clinical studies that you would do for TB vaccines have typically been done in the Western Cape, now they're realizing that everyone in the Western Cape has been exposed to TB, so you're not really immunizing people against, you're actually measuring people for latent reinfection or reinfection. We're in the epicenter of TB in the world, within an hour's drive from here, is TB. So a lot of work and money is going to TB vaccines, in answer to the question from the honourable member. Also from the questions of SADC and the BRICS, some of the funding programs that we're running involve African partner countries, and that depends on who they collaborate with and supply proposals. We also have a program called TB Report, which is a partnership with the NIH, which involves Brazil, India, and South Africa to standardize clinical sample specimen handling and then to fund big vaccine trials into that. So we do a fair amount in that space, and it's almost limited by the funding that we have in the BRICS. And we also have a malaria program where we've developed some malaria candidates where the clinic studies will be done in Africa. We couldn't do it here. We don't have enough patients to do a malaria clinical study. In answer to your question on November about how many of the study one projects do we like to have success in, so these are 3 to 5 year projects. You don't develop a vaccine. A drug to get to market takes 15 years. And the vaccine is 10, 12 years. We are hoping, realistically, if the global stats are to be believed, that 1 in 10 is a realistic expectation. So we're hoping that 3 of these will go all the way. And I quoted one example today, which I think will go all the way in terms of the app and the devices, etc. The IT diagnostic space where your timescales are short, so we'll be able to show demonstrate success in the near term, the next 3 to 4 to 5 years. But on the vaccines and drugs, we're looking 10 years from now. But the key thing for me is that we are leading the global research in these areas. We are not following. And I think that's a big difference to 4 or 5 years ago. Your question about diet and lifestyle, I think, is more and more we're realizing we are what we eat. Cancer is often related to what you eat. Diabetes, we all know, it's related to what you eat. Your epigenetics, what switches some gene on and some genes off, has been shown to be related to your lifestyle, your sleep, your nutrition. And I think I agree with you that a key area that we are missing and we need to do more in. In answer to your question, remember about why only 4 health policies a year? These studies tend to be quite big and quite long. Multiple thousands of people, and to implement policy you would need 12 months ago to deliver 3rd year, and I think that's the reason behind that logic. A lot of the informed spam, they're quite new, and we had to guess where we thought we would be, because previously it was set on, you know, this is probably more realistic. Some of them were overshot, some of them were undershot. And I think next year we might have overshot, and we'll be slightly below, and we'll try to find the right kind of balance. Commercialization is very important. That's certainly one of the reasons why this entity of SHIP was formed, was to see could we commercialize IP. For 2 reasons. One is because we want to be seen as innovators in the global market, and the diabetes diagnostic is one of those projects that came out of the MRC. And 2 is if it is successful, we could generate revenues into the MRC which could fund research gain and reduce reliance on government funding and MTEF all the time. I think it's got to be aspirational. And if you look at the MRC UK, they've got the MRC Technologies, there's Cancer Research Technologies, there's the Max Planck Center, there's Harvard and the Broad Institute. That's the way the world is going, where these big research entities commercialize what they do. The key thing from my perspective is that we have some gaps within South Africa, and the MRC currently set up is very much health systems related. So for projects we fund, we let the IPR Act take, so we fund Limpopo University of Walter Sulu. Walter Sulu owns the IP in BRAS. But there's a clause in the contract that if it is not commercialized, it will come back to us and we will manage it. So we're trying to foster innovation around the country and not own and hold up. We don't have. So if I understand your question correctly, Mr. about vaccines and GMP, that is a hot area at the moment. There's only one place in the country that does what I would call vaccine production, and that's BioVac down the road in distant islands. They just will finish, which effectively is you get vaccines in from overseas and they put them into vials and distribute them. There were a couple of projects coming online with other partners now where they're going to integrating forward in the process from the manufacturer. But if you look outside of the space, there is a massive drive from the major funders and donors and WHO to have vaccines made in the continent. but that's a big investment. And then the question again that's in play at the moment between departments of health, science, technology, DTI, well, what is the first vaccine we want to make? Because it's a 200, 300, 400 million rand investment. You've got to have a vaccine that someone's willing to give you, and then you've got to build a factory. And then you're talking 5 years. So it's definitely a high priority, but the way it's been done is to integrate forward and to build the process organically, reverse organically, by integrating early in the process. And that's how it's currently been done. And someone like SHIP, we are trying to develop a pipeline to move into something like that and to close the gap. But we're talking 5 to 10 years from it being a reality. But it is a massive area. If the Serum Institute of India has a breakout of an infection, half the world vaccines just stop. So commercialization, yes, is very important, and that's specifically why SHIP was formed. And that is my last question.
Thank you, Richard. Honourable members, I think before we get to fruitless and wasteful expenditure and irregular expenditure, I'd like to add to the benefits of the NIH-MRG collaboration. And one of the benefits is that the main PI or the lead PI on all these projects is South Africans. It's at the South African institution. And one of the requirements is that there must be a US PI as well. And this actually helps our South African researchers to build up those relationships. And the majority of the grants being allocated to these institutions is NIH-R01 grants, which is very prestigious. Because once they can put their R01 grant behind their name, they can actually apply for more grants at National Institutes of Health or CDC, all of those big funding institutions. Back to fruitless and wasteful expenditure, I think we all would love to have a clean audit, but once you have more than one staff member, there's always challenges to apply and adhere to all policy and procedures. From the MRC's perspective, as you can see, with fruitless and wasteful expenditure, we've been able to recover and approve about 60,000 of that 69,000. And what we've adopted is that it's just constant communication. Obviously, things will happen throughout the year. It's important that our systems pick up these errors and document that, and also communicate to staff if they are responsible for those actions, what will be the consequences. And I think that is that's important from MRC side. With irregular expenditure, I don't have all the details here with me, but once again, it also comes down to communication. And I think, I don't know if the chair of the audit committee can assist or add anything else to this, please.
Thank you, Chairperson and honourable members. I am not sure if any of the honourable members of the committee 2 years ago and before the era of team audits at the MRC. And the MRC was one of the institutions with irregular expenditure that was not just not complying with proper procedures. So the total amount of irregular expenditure is really small, and it is all just an element of the supply chain management procedure that was not followed. So there is no expenditure that was not for good purpose, but there was an element of non-compliance with supply chain management. From the audit committee, the thing that we've been extremely strict about, including that where there has been some non-compliance, that there's a proper process of informing the responsible of counsel, or that there's a disciplinary procedure that follows. And then lastly, to say that there's a balance there on the irregular expenditure, which is a complex discussion with the Auditor General about the Preferential Procurement Policy Framework Act. And there was an amendment to the Act on how you calculate the 90-10 and the 80-20 rules in terms of the Preferential Procurement Policy Act, and that is actually an ongoing discussion with Treasury and the Auditor General, because the intention of the amendment has had consequences that really have financial implications for the whole of government, because it is not it is no longer making any allowance for a technical evaluation as well as the price evaluation of a tender. And for the very big tenders, I think that probably it has an implication that Treasury and Auditor General might want to reconsider. So really just to reassure the committee that in looking at the detail of the amount, the money was all put to good purpose. There was one larger amount which was related to expenditure on a conference, but all of the other amounts were small amounts, and it was really minor non-compliances. If you want to know the amount it was previously, I think 3-4 years ago, there was an irregular expenditure amount of 380 million. So I think there are basically occasional irregular expenditures, as would happen in any institution. But there's nothing where there has been improper conduct or some kind of corruption or kickback. It's all money put to good purpose. So I think and my colleagues in the board, where we've also dealt with it in the board, will know that we're happy with management's ability to ensure that they are following proper procedures. Thank you.
I propose that we have tea. We come back and see if we don't round up, if there are any other questions. So, two big members and the guests. Tea break for 10 minutes, looking. Okay.